Hello, everybody. It's Brian Tracy. Our teleseminar is called Turbo Strategy. I promise you this is going to be a wonderful seminar. We're going to talk about some of the very best ideas ever discovered and how you can use your mind more effectively to accomplish better goals, especially financial goals in your business. One of the questions we ask our audience is, we always say, how many people here are self-employed? And whenever I ask that, about 10 to 15% of the people raise their hands. And then I say, well, now let's think about that. How many people here are really self-employed? And eventually every hand goes up and everybody realizes that they are all self-employed. What we know is the top 3% of people in our society see themselves as self-employed all their lives, even if they work for someone else. Now, self-employment means that you are responsible for every aspect of your own personal services corporation. You are responsible for strategy, planning, organization, setting priorities for income, revenues, finances, quality control, training, development, and so on. The top people think like this all the time, even if they work for someone else. So I want you to think, if you are a business owner, this is directly applicable to you. These are the same principles I've taught to Fortune 500 corporations, but they're absolutely as applicable as if you are a salesperson, an independent person with a small business, in any kind of career, but the principles also apply to your personal life. So think of these multidimensionally. Think how you can use them in a variety of different ways. Now, here's my first question. Let us begin. What is the highest paid work in America? What is the highest paid work in America? Well, the answer to that question is the highest paid work is the work of thinking. Thomas Edison once said that people would rather die than think. But thinking is the highest paid work, and I will tell you why. It's because you can tell whether something is valuable or not by asking, what are the consequences of doing it or not doing it? In other words, what is the multiplication effect of a particular activity? Whatever has huge potential consequences is very valuable and important. Whatever has low or no consequences is not valuable. Thinking and deciding about what it is you want to do and how you're going to go about doing it has the greatest consequences of all, because it can impact your whole life. It can determine the months and years ahead. It can determine whether or not you end up wealthy or worrying about money. So thinking is the highest paid and the most consequential work that you do. And here's what we know. The better you think about yourself and your life, the better results you get. And the reason for that is because the better you think, the better decisions you make. And your whole life today is a total result of all the decisions that you've made up to date. Everything that is happening to you today is a result of having made previous decisions in a certain way. Every good thing is a result of having made good decisions. Every problem is a result of having made poor decisions. And the better you think, the better decisions you make, which means the consequences for you are absolutely extraordinary. Two of the top strategic planners in the world today are Gary Hamel and Gary Prahalad, and they have a concept which is being used now by most Fortune 500 corporations, and it's called future intent. And their basic consideration, their basic conclusion is that the very best individuals and companies have a very clear intent or intention for what they want to be, have, and do in the future. And I've taught this forever. I just love the concept. It just means the greater clarity you have with regard to who you are and what you want and where you're going and how you're going to get there, the better decisions you make. The better decisions you make, the more accurately you use your time and resources, the fewer mistakes you make, the better results you get, and so on. So it's really important to remember this, is that future intention determines present action. The greater clarity you have with regard to where you're going and where you want to end up, the easier it is for you to make the right decisions this minute. Because every decision you make this minute, you can say, does this move me toward what I want or not? In time management, we have a very simple concept called A or B. And it basically says this, is once you've decided what you really want to be, have, or do in your life, then you ask yourself this question, is this an A task that moves me toward that, or is this a B task that does not move me toward it, or even worse, moves me away? If you want the simplest time management technique in history, just do A tasks. Do the things that move you toward the things you say that you want, and refuse to do anything that doesn't. As a result, you will step on the accelerator of your own life, and you get vastly more done in a shorter period of time. Now, the second principle I want to talk to you about is what we call situation analysis. Whenever we do strategic planning for an individual or an organization, the first thing we do is we call time out and stop the clock and say, where are we today? What is our exact situation today? You know, it is quite amazing what we find when we work with our coaching clients is if you ask them, who are your biggest customers today? What are your biggest sources of profitability? What are your greatest opportunities for the future? Who are your biggest competitors? Why is it that your potential customers buy from your competitors rather than from you? Why is it that your customers buy from you rather than your competitors? It's absolutely amazing how many people go, huh? I hadn't even thought of that. But these are the most important questions in situation analysis. And here's what we have discovered, is that most companies and individuals today either have no strategy at all for their lives and their businesses, or the strategy they have is obsolete. Now, what has made it obsolete? What has made it obsolete is rapid change. When you set a strategy, you have a certain set of assumptions. This is the way the world is. This is the way the world is going to be. This is what I'm going to do in order to take advantage of it. But when you have dramatic changes in the economy, 9/11, the war in Iraq, changes in the stock market, collapses of the high-tech industry, and so on, what you have to do is you have to pull back and say, wait a minute, the situation has changed, therefore the strategy has to change. Here's the problem. If you do not have a strategy, you are forced to operate. And this is the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people. Successful people have a long-term vision of where they're going, and then they evaluate everything they're doing in terms of the vision. Unsuccessful people don't, so what they do is they focus on the day-to-day activities. It's almost like climbing a mountain, looking at your feet the whole way, as opposed to every so often standing back and looking way into the future to see where you're going. Remember, the greater clarity you have with regard to where you want to end up, the more likely it is you will do the things in the short term necessary to get there. For example, let me give you two personal strategic objectives. One is to double your income. Second is to become financially independent over the course of your working lifetime. Now, doubling your income, of course, is a part of the process. What we have found in interviews with tens of thousands of men and women who become wealthy, whether or not they make a lot of money, is you find that they, at an early age, began thinking long-term about becoming financially independent. Then, they were able to evaluate every financial decision and purchase in their lives and say, is this going to help me to become financially independent, or might this hold me back, hurt me, get me off track? And by being very clear about that long-term goal of financial independence, surprise, surprise, they made better and better decisions in the short term, which eventually assured that they achieve financial independence in the long term. With regard to doubling your income, in order to double your income, you have to double your hourly rate. This is one of the principles that we teach, is that everybody gets paid by the hour. So therefore, what you have to do is ask yourself, is what I'm doing right now earning me the kind of money per hour that I need to earn to eventually double my income? And if it's not, A versus B, you stop doing it. And you keep doing only the things that will pay you the kind of money that you want to earn in the future. If you just do that until it becomes a habit, it starts to become natural and easy. You get up in the morning and say, is this moving me toward my short-term and long-term financial goals? And if it's not, you don't do it. So one of the questions that we ask over and over again is this, and it goes to a story of a woman whose husband died at the age of 56 and left her a construction company. He spent his whole life building the construction company, and then he died of a heart attack. She was 50 years old. She had no business experience. She spent most of her life taking care of the family and church and social responsibilities. So after the funeral, she went into the company, and she said, I need to know how this company works. My husband has kind of kept it to himself. Maybe you can explain to me how the business works. They said, well, don't you worry your pretty little head. We'll take care of everything. We know what we're doing, and we'll just send you a check once a month. You don't need to bother coming in. She said, no, you don't understand. This is my company now. I need to understand how it works. They said, okay. They realized she was serious. So they took her around and they showed her the different parts of the company. And she said, this is a very successful part of our work, interior renovations. It's very profitable. We have a great reputation. It's really working well. She said, good. Let's do more of that. Then she went to another division. Well, this is exterior renovations and siding and roofing, and we've been trying to get into this for several years, but the competition's fierce, and we haven't had too much success. She said, well, if it's not working, let's stop doing it and take the people and money that we're spending here and spend more of them on doing the things that are working well. They said, well, you know, your husband really put a lot of time and money into building this part of the business. She said, yes, but my husband's not here anymore, and I have to run this business. So therefore, please accept my advice and my guidance. So they did. So this became her management style. She would come into the office a few times a week. She would walk around and she would ask two questions. And these are your go-forward questions for life. And question number one is, what's working? And question number two is, what's not working? If it's working, do more of it. If it's not working, either fix it up or discontinue it. Well, after she had done one complete run-through of the company and understood what was working and what wasn't working, she then went through the company and said, now, who's working and who's not working? Who is giving us the best results? Who is really performing here and who's not? And the people who weren't working, some of them had been there for a long time, they encouraged to go somewhere else. Well, the bottom line of this was, within 10 years, she had taken her husband's company that he'd spent his whole life building to $10 million in sales. She built it to $25 million in sales, and she sold it and made a large profit and retired financially independent for life. The point is this, is that in your life and in your work, you have to just keep holding this up like a frame that you're looking for and saying, what's working, what's not working. Now, you need to apply this to every part of your business and every part of your personal life. Look at your relationships. Look at your investments. Look at your activities. What's working? What's not working? If it's not working, then what you have to do is have the honesty and the discipline to stop doing it. And if it is working, then you have to have the focus and the energy to throw your whole heart into doing more and more of it. Now, here is the secret to success. After this, you could actually hang up if you wanted. Here it is. The secret to success is to spend more and more time getting better and better at doing those few things that give you the best results. Let me repeat that. Do more and more and get better and better at those few things that give you the best results. As a result, you will achieve 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 times as much as the average person. So, the rapid rate of change in our society today requires continual revision of strategy. How do you know when you should revise your strategy? Well, you ask yourself the question, is it working? If it's working, then just do more of it. If you're on a straight stretch of road, you put your pedal to the metal and go faster. But whenever you experience stress, frustration, failure, dissatisfaction, anger, poor results, low profitability, whenever you start to get bad feedback from your activities, have the courage to stop and say, hey, wait a minute, is this working or not? Am I on the right track? Maybe I'm on the wrong track. It's an interesting thing about many people. They hate to be wrong, but there's a story of the man and woman, and they're driving out of San Diego, for example, and they're driving toward Los Angeles, and she says, honey, is Mexico on the way to Los Angeles? And he says, nope. She said, well, we just passed a sign saying we're heading for Mexico. He says, doesn't matter. We said, we're making great time. Well, many people are like that. They're making great time. In fact, one of the natural tendencies of people is when they find things aren't working is they step on the gas to go even faster in the wrong direction. They think that frantic or furious activity is going to somehow get them out of a problem if they're on the wrong road. When in reality, the smartest thing you can do is stop the clock, stop the car, look at the map, and maybe go back to where you got off the road and get onto another or a better road. So, one of the things we do in strategic planning is we teach people to practice what is called zero-based thinking. Now, many of you have heard this from me before. I think it's one of the 3 to 5 best thinking tools you'll ever learn in your life, but it's based on asking yourself this question. Knowing what I now know, is there anything that I'm doing today that I wouldn't get into again today if I had to do it over? Knowing what I now know. Now, in a time of rapid change, in a time of exploding information, growing technology, rapid changes in competition, you have to ask this question on a go-forward basis. Knowing what I now know, is there anything that I am doing today that I wouldn't start up again today if I had to do it over? And the fact of the matter is that everybody has, almost every single day, something that, based on your information today, you wouldn't get into again. You know, Benjamin Trigo once wrote, "The very worst use of time is to do very well what need not be done at all." Many people are working very hard to do something very well that, knowing what they now know, they wouldn't even get into again. And so there's 3 areas where you practice zero-based thinking, drawing a line under the past and reevaluating it. The first has to do with people and relationships. Fully 85% of your success or failure in life, of your happiness or unhappiness in life, is going to be determined by the people with whom you associate. live with, marry with, sleep with, and so on. So people in relationships, business and personal, inside and outside your company, are really the critical factors that determine your success or failure. So you have to ask yourself, is there anyone in my work life that, knowing what I now know, I wouldn't get involved with again? Is there anyone that you have hired or assigned or promoted that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't even hire them again if they walked in today with your current level of knowledge about their ability and personality? Is there anyone that you wouldn't assign to a particular task? Remember, in the Gulf War, there was an awful lot of talk about how Jay Garner was going to be put in charge of the reconstruction of Iraq. He went over there for 2 weeks. They immediately realized that this person was not suited, although he was competent in other areas, and they had the courage to admit that, knowing what I now know, I wouldn't have put him in charge, and they jerked him out and they put in Bremer, who was a much more capable person. One of the marks of superior people is they have the courage to admit that, if knowing what they now know they wouldn't do it, they have the courage to change. So be open to the need to change. The second area with regard to people and relationships has to do with your personal life. Is there anyone in your personal life that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get involved with again? Is there anyone in your business life, your social life, that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get involved with? And the way that you can tell if you're in a zero-based thinking situation is that the situation causes you stress. It causes you frustration. It causes you aggravation. Whenever you start to feel stress or aggravation for any reason, it's nature's way of telling you that you need to re-examine what you're doing. Okay? Now, the second area of zero-based thinking has to do with your business. It has to do with your products or services. Are there any products or services that you're offering, selling, promoting, that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't bring to the market? Are there any processes or methods or procedures in your business that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't start up again? Are there any methods of advertising or sales or marketing or costs or expenses in your business that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get into? If there are, then the next question is, how do I get out of this and how fast? Is how do you slam on the brakes, stop doing it, and start doing something else? Here's the dumbest thing that people do. They say, well, it's not working, so we'll just keep looking at it, see what happens for the next few weeks or few months. No, we don't have the luxury of spending weeks and months pondering it. You have to have the courage to admit that this is not working and to make changes quickly. That is the mark of leadership. And the third place where you practice zero-based thinking has to do with any investments in your life. Now, it could be an investment of money. Many people realize that their investment choices have not been good, but they say, well, I'll hang on to it because it'll go back up again. No. If you realize that today you wouldn't buy the stock, sell the stock. So look at investments, and also look at investments of time. Sometimes you put a lot of time or money or even energy or emotion into a person or a situation or a product or a service. But ask yourself, instead of trying to cover your bet by investing more time and energy, ask, knowing what I now know, would I get into this area at all? And if the answer is no, stop doing it and start doing something else. So here are three key statements that you can use for the rest of your life with regard to strategy. Statement number one is, I made a mistake. Don't be afraid to admit that you're not perfect. Do you know how many times the average person is wrong in making business and personal decisions? The average is about 70%. 70% of your decisions will turn out to be wrong in the fullness of time. So if you find that you're wrong, cut your losses quickly. Cut it off, get out of the situation, get on to doing something else. You know, I have two rules of horses that are quoted all over the world. Brian's first rule of horses is that the best way to ride a horse is in the direction that it's going. In other words, do more of what's working and go faster. The second rule of horses is this: if the horse is dead, get off. If the horse is dead, get off. If it's not working, stop doing it, and stop doing it now. Don't sit there whipping the horse and hoping it'll get up and get going again. If the horse is dead, get off. Okay, so the second thing you learn to say is, I was wrong. Now, it takes a lot of courage to say this. Men especially have a terrible time admitting that they were wrong, that they made a mistake. We have an incredible desire to be right. What you do is you just say, I was wrong. I made a mistake. Seemed like a good idea at the time, but in retrospect, it wasn't a good idea at all, so I'm going to stop doing it. And the wonderful thing is, as soon as you say, I was wrong, I made a mistake, it's over, your mind clears, and you can get on with what works rather than trying to do what's not working. And the third statement you can learn to say is, I changed my mind. I changed my mind. Remember, whenever you get new information, the situation changes. Be willing to make a decision on Monday and change it on Tuesday if you get new information. Don't get locked in, and don't let your ego manipulate you and force you to stay in a situation that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get into because you've changed your mind. Okay, the starting point of strategy. The starting point of strategy is clarity, and clarity is deciding exactly what you want. Exactly what you want in life. Now, this is the hardest thing of all. If you ask 100 people on the street, tell me exactly what you want in life in the three key areas of life, your financial life, your relationships and family, and your health. Tell me exactly what you want. 97% of those people don't know. I know because I have given tests to thousands of people, and they're absolutely astonished. I say, here's a pen and a pad of paper. Write down 10 things that you want in your life. And they're absolutely amazed. Some people can't get past two or three. They thought they knew, but when they're actually forced to write it down, they don't. So decide exactly what you want. And by the way, that means precise, clear, objective. Deciding what you want means that you could write it down so clearly that you could then give it to a child, and the child could read it and know exactly what it was, and the child could even tell you whether or not you've accomplished it. I gave about 1,000 people an exercise yesterday. I said, write down your three most important goals in life. Now, whenever I ask this question, I give them 30 seconds to answer. They will almost always write down three goals, and they are financial, relationship, and health. I said, now, how many of your goals did you write down that were specific versus non-specific? Now, non-specific means, you know, be healthier, you know, be happier, make more money. These aren't goals. These are just general fantasies. They're like cigarette smoke in the air. They have no motive power. They're bullets with no powder in the cartridge. So these people go through life shooting blanks. But a really clear goal is I earn X number of dollars each year. I weigh X number of pounds. I spend X number of hours, days, weeks with my family on face-to-face or R&R each year, and so on. So decide exactly what you want. Now, the purpose of strategy in business always is this. It is to increase return on equity. It's to increase the amount of money that you are earning as a result of your business activities. That's the whole purpose of strategy, to organize and reorganize and reposition and refocus so that the things that you're doing are yielding higher dollar amounts than before. Remember this, in business, every single activity or result can be defined in dollar terms. And it's very important that you do that, because the more specific your dollar definition of your activity or goal, the more likely it is you are to achieve it, because the easier it is for you to measure how well you're doing. Now, one quick aside, ROE, return on equity, is the key to business strategy, but ROE, return on energy, is the key to personal strategy. Is in personal strategy or personal strategizing for your life, what you're looking at is for ways to increase your return on life. How do you get more return from the amount of time you put in? And you always have to ask yourself this question, is what I'm doing now the highest and best use of my time? Does it give me my greatest return in financial terms and results, or satisfaction, or happiness, or so on? Keep asking yourself, is this giving me my highest return on energy of the investment of my mental, emotional, and physical capital? And if it's not, then say no and don't do it. Remember A versus B. Keep doing the A tasks, the one that gives you really high return in terms of rewards and satisfaction, and just don't do the B tasks. So the second part of strategy is your job is to reposition yourself so that you increase your ROE. And you have to keep asking, how could I use my time, use my energy, use my resources better so that I can get a higher return on my activities? And the bottom line is to achieve better financial results. So here are the questions that you need to ask yourself. And these are the great questions in strategy. Every failure in personal life and business life comes from a failure to ask and answer these questions accurately. Question number one is, what am I trying to do? What am I trying to do? In other words, what are my goals and objectives? What am I trying to accomplish? Why am I doing this? What am I trying to achieve? Question number two is, how am I trying to do it? How am I trying to do it? What is the way or ways that I am using to achieve that goal? Question number three is, could there be a better way? Could there be a better way? You know, all great changes in strategy take place when a person realizes, you know, there's a better way to accomplish this. And the better way could be being used by your competitors. You could find it in a magazine. You could think about it as an inspiration. But keep asking, because one of the marks of the superior person is they're willing to admit that they may not be doing it the best way. They're willing to abandon a way that doesn't work in order to use a way that does work. Now, here's another question. Number four, what are my assumptions? There are two types of assumptions, by the way. There are what are called implicit and explicit. An implicit assumption is an assumption that you just have that you never question. For example, one of the implicit assumptions that actually sinks businesses and careers is that there is a market for what I'm selling, or that there is a substantial enough market so that I can make a good living selling what I'm selling, or that people will pay the price that I'm asking for my product or service, even though business doesn't seem to be too good today, or that my product or service is preferable to that of my competitors in the eyes of the majority of my market. Any one of these assumptions is implicit, but it may not be true at all. There's a great rule in management consulting. Always ask yourself this question: what evidence do you have for that conclusion? What evidence do you have for that conclusion? In many cases, you'll find that people are operating on assumptions for which there is no evidence. And if you actually push it and probe it, you'll find that actually the evidence or the answers are the opposite to what you thought. So keep having the courage to test your assumptions by saying, what is the evidence for my assumptions? Now, the other type of assumptions are explicit assumptions. An explicit assumption is something that you're very clear of. You're consciously aware of it. So it's an assumption that somebody will do a job when you assign it to them, that a customer will pay if they buy it, that the product will be produced and delivered on time. These are explicit assumptions. But you need to question both of them because, as Alec McKenzie once said, errant assumptions lie at the root of every failure. Errant assumptions or wrong assumptions lie at the root of every failure. We make an assumption that is simply not true, and then we act as if it were true, and we're always exasperated to find out that it wasn't true at all. And this can happen, by the way, with relationships, with investments, with customers, and especially with people. So be cautious. So then the next question is, what if my assumptions were wrong? If these assumptions were wrong, what would I have to do then? What would I do then if my assumptions were wrong? What if there was no market for what I'm selling? What if I'm not a good enough salesperson? What if my company does not have the capability to sell and market this product, no matter how good it is? What if the competition is so fierce or priced so low that I can never sell enough of this to make a substantial profit? What would I do then? Now, this doesn't mean that your assumptions are wrong. It just means that you have the courage to question them. And the wonderful thing about this is if you have the courage to wonder whether or not you could be wrong or your assumptions could be wrong, it expands your mind so that you see yourself and your life with a much wider vista. You see a greater range of possibilities open to you, and as a result, you can make better decisions. And by making better decisions, you end up getting better results. So the next part of strategic planning and turbo strategy is for you to resolve to create a great business, a great career, and a great life. Now, I came from limited beginnings, as you know. Sometimes I joke, I say I started off so far behind, I thought I was first. And I had low self-esteem. I did not graduate from high school. I eventually went back and got a master's degree in business in my 30s. I've read thousands of books and articles. I've consulted with more than 500 companies, so I know a little bit now. I find that what happens in life is that the more you learn, the more you realize how little you know. And by the time you get to the end of your life, you feel like a complete ignoramus. But I know a little bit now. And what I've found is this, is that people begin to become successful and begin to have great lives when they begin to imagine that they are capable of having a great life. And coming from low self-esteem, it never occurred to me that that was possible for me. And then I realized, hey, wait a minute. This is a decision that you make. Now, here was the scary thing. I found that if you do not make a decision to have a great life, by default, you end up with a mediocre life. If you don't make a decision to make your life something wonderful, you just end up with an average life. And I found that over and over again throughout history, men and women who become great at a certain point in their lives decide that they're going to do something wonderful with their lives. So, with regard to your business, say, how could I create this as a great business? With regard to your careers, how could you create this as a great career? Or how could you create a great life with regard to your family? And here's one of the rules that we've learned, is that everybody in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. Every company in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. Everybody and every company that is doing well today was once doing poorly. And anything that anyone else has done, you can do as well. Anything that other people have achieved, you can achieve. When you speak to the heads, as I have, of the Fortune 500 company, I spoke to millionaires and billionaires. It's absolutely amazing how hesitant, how tentative they are, you know, how fortunate they feel that they have been. They're just ordinary people that have sort of set on a very clear vision and just worked at it and worked at it. But they're always a little bit amazed that their company has become so great or their life has become so great. And they all started at the bottom. And since we all start at the bottom, we'll just say, okay, that was then, this is now. I'm going to make my company, I'm going to make my life, my career, I'm going to make it something astonishing, something great. So the question is, what are you now, or what could you become passionate about? And this is the most remarkable discovery. In Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, he found the turning point on going from good to great for companies is when the senior person in the company asked the question, what could we become passionate about as a company? What could we become really excited about being really good at? So ask yourself, what could you become passionate about? What could you become excited about? What could you become so excited about you could hardly wait to get there to work and to do it and become better at it? So here's a question. If you could wave a magic wand and you could be absolutely outstanding in any area in your business life, what would it be? If you could have the finest products or services in any area, what area would that be? Because that's the answer to what you could become passionate about. And then the only question you ask is, how could I achieve that? Remember, every company that is great started off with mediocre products that didn't work and broke down. And what they did is just bit by bit, they made them better and better and better until they were the market leaders. And what others have done, you can do as well. If you're talking about a skill, by the way, people say, well, I'd love to be the top of my field in this area. I said, well, go ahead and set it down as a goal. Make that your strategic goal. Make a plan to achieve it and just work on getting a little bit better in your field every day. Now, how long does it take to achieve mastery in a field? Well, in a business, it takes 2 years to break even, 4 years to make a profit, 7 years to move ahead of the pack into the top 10%. It takes a long time to go from good to great. In a career, it's the same way. It takes about 5 to 7 years for you to get into the top 10% in your field. And a lot of people say, oh, geez, I don't want to spend that kind of time. I don't have that kind of time. I mean, that's 5 to 7 years. I mean, I'll be 5 to 7 years older. Well, I have two observations for you. First of all, how much older are you going to be in 5 to 7 years anyway? And the answer is, you're going to be 5 to 7 years older. But here's the most important observation. The time is going to pass anyway. The time is going to pass anyway. The only question is, are you going to be one of the leaders in your field in 5 to 7 years? Are you still going to be mediocre? Because if you don't decide to become a leader, you will automatically, by default, simply be average or below average. And the time is going to pass anyway. So, oh, what the heck? Put your head down, get going, get moving. Keep taking and putting one step in front of the other, and you will be absolutely astonished. A week, a month, a year, a few years from now, you'll lift up your head, and you will be one of the most respected and esteemed and most successful people in your field. And nothing can stop you except yourself. So, in what area, activity, product, service, could you become absolutely excellent? What area could you become absolutely excellent in? And you look at it, many people realize that the area that they're in is either an area that they could not become excellent in, at least they couldn't become better than anybody else, or it's an area that they don't even want to become excellent in. So what they do is they say, you know, this was good at that time, but now I think I'm going to switch my energies because that is the area where I want to excel. And then they put their whole heart and all their energies into that area. They become passionate about it. They start to get better and better, get more and more and better results. And a week, a month, a few years from now, you look up and your whole life is transformed. So all strategic success comes from achieving superiority in some area. It comes from achieving superiority in some area. So in what areas could you become superior? Now remember, you only have to be superior at one thing in order to break out of the pack and move into the lead. Domino's Pizza became superior in delivery. All they did was become the fastest delivery pizza company in the business. As a result, they ended up with seven 1,000 pizza restaurants, and Tom Monahan, the founder, retired with a fortune of $1.8 billion. Not because the pizzas were better, but because they were superior in home delivery. Maybe you could become superior in just one area that would enable you to break out of the pack. What is your competitive advantage? What is it you do or that you could do superior to your competitors? Whatever it is, set it down, make a plan, go to work to lead the field in that area. Now, here's a great part of strategic planning. It is to develop a vision. And the way you develop a vision, which is the mark of leadership, is you project yourself forward in your mind 5 years. Remember, Stephen Covey became famous by saying, begin with the goal in mind. Begin with the end in mind. But what we find is that all superior thinkers begin with the end in mind. In this, is that they project forward 5 years, and they imagine what their life and business would look like 5 years from now if it was perfect in every respect. What they do is they practice the concept of what is called idealization. Is they imagine that they have a magic wand, and you could wave the magic wand, and 3 to 5 years from now, your business would be perfect in every respect. If your business was perfect, what would it look like? Write it down. What level of sales would you be at if your business was perfect? What level of profitability or percentage of profitability on sales? What kind of reputation would you have in the marketplace? What kind of people would you have? What kind of products or services would you be offering? What kind of customers would you have who would love you and recommend you to others? What kind of markets would you be in? This kind of thinking is the thinking of the superior person. The superior person has a vision of an ideal future. And then they come back to the present and they say, what would have to happen in the short term for me to achieve that goal, the future intent, in the long term? And what would I have to do first, right now, today, in order to take the first step toward achieving that future goal? And then they take the first step. Quick sidebar, by the way, one of the marks of superior people is courage. And courage means that you take action in the direction of your goals with no guarantee of success. You step out in faith. You say, that's what I want to be or have or do, and there's no guarantees. And usually if it's a big enough goal, it'd be a little bit scary. And it may cost a lot of time and energy and money and so on, and there's a very high risk of failure. But courageous people take action anyway, even though there's no guarantee. And the most wonderful thing is each step you take towards your goal will create the next step, and you'll see the next step and the next step. So look at your products and services. If your products and services were the very best in the market, what would they look like? How would they be described? What could you do to make your products or services absolutely superior? How about your level of sales and profitability? If your sales and profitability were just ideal, what would they be? How about your people, your management, your processes, your internal functions of your company? If your business was perfect, going around waving a magic wand like Tinkerbell with fairy dust, and everything was perfect, what would it look like? Talk this over with your friends, your staff, your spouse. Honey, guys, if our company, our life was perfect, what would it look like? And then here's the rule. Imagine that you have no limitations. Don't say, well, I can't afford it, and I didn't have enough education. There's some people running Fortune 500 companies who are high school dropouts. There's some people who are millionaires and multi-billionaires and never got through college, like Bill Gates and Michael Dell, never got through college, but still they become some of the richest people in the world. So don't sell yourself short and say you can't do it because of this or that or something else. Remember this, all business skills are learnable. That means any business skill that you need to learn to achieve any goal you can set for yourself is either learnable or buyable. You can either learn it yourself or hire someone else. And you are as smart as anybody you'll ever meet. There is nobody out there who's smarter than you, and nobody is better than you. If someone is doing better, they just learned some things and practiced them before you have. And anything that anyone else has done, you can do as well. The fact that they have done it is proof that you can do it as well. I often use this analogy. I say, can you drive a car? If you can drive a car, and the answer is yes, then you can learn any business skill. You can excel at anything you need to excel at to become successful. Driving a car is an order of complexity in terms of talents and skills that is so high that if you can drive a car, you can learn anything else. And so therefore, don't hold yourself back by saying, well, I didn't get good grades in school, or I don't have a lot of money, or I've got a lot of bills, or I'm older, or anything else. Forget all that, because there's hundreds of thousands of other people who've had it worse than you could ever dream of in your whole life, and have gone on to accomplish wonderful things. So ask yourself, if I had no limitations, what would I want to be, have, or do? How could I create my ideal life? And then finally, the question you ask is who would be my perfect customers? If I could pick any customers I wanted, which customers would they be? I was talking to a businessman in New York just 2 days ago. He worked together with a company that started an agency, a service agency, and they made a list of the 10 top companies in America that would be the perfect customers for them. And then they sat down, and they made a plan, and they began asking other people and hiring consultants, and they made contacts, and they went to visit these companies. And over the course of the next 8 years, they got 8 of those 10 customers. As they worked and worked, the first customer took 3 years to get. The second customer took 4 years. And over time, they got 8 of the top 10 customers, what they considered to be the best customers in the industry. The founder of the company was a woman, and she recently sold her shares in her company for $330 million and retired. And they started off in a one-room office with one question: who would be the perfect customers for us to get? And what would be our strategy to get those customers? What would we have to be? What would we have to do? What would we have to have? What kind of reputation for products, services, and people? What kind of deliverables would we have to achieve in order to attract those? And they went to work with small customers, and they did a superb job with their smaller customers, and they built up until they were ready to get the first of the biggies, and then the second and the third and the fourth. And what other people have done, you can do as well. Okay, so apply the 80-20 rule. This is another key part of strategy. Apply the 80-20 rule to every activity. So remember that the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle, which goes back to 1895, says that 20% of your activities account for 80% of your results. It also says, by the way, that 20% of the companies in any industry make 80% of the profits. 20% of the people in any society own 80% of the assets. 20% of people in any company produce 80% of the results. So in your business, in strategy, you have to ask yourself the question, what are the 20% of customers who can or who do produce 80% of our sales? Who are they now? Who could they be in the future? Who should they be in the future? Second question you ask is, what are the 20% of our products or services that account for 80% of our volume? In other words, which of our products are the most popular? Which are the products and services that people buy the most of, like the most of, are the easiest to sell, are obviously in the minds of our market superior to our competitors? It's absolutely amazing. Many companies make the mistake of spending an enormous amount of time, energy, and money promoting products and services that aren't doing particularly well in the market. They kind of assume that their best-selling products are already taken care of. These are called the cash cows. And they devote their time and energy to selling products and services that the market is telling them, we don't want these, or at least we don't want them in sufficient quantity. And so therefore, whenever a turnaround specialist takes over a company, the first thing they do is they say, what's working, what's not working, what's selling really well, and then they take the best salespeople off of the weak products and the best internal people off of the weak products, and they put all of their top people onto the products and services that are already selling the most. And instead of trying to sell weak products, they try to sell more and more of the products and services that people seem to like better and better. And finally, you have to ask yourself, what are the 20% of your activities that account for 80% of your profits or results? Now, this is really important. Peter Drucker has a great observation. He said that most people divide their time over the number of activities they have to do, whereas the top people divide their time based on the value of each activity. So ask yourself this question, and this is my great question. I just love it. Ask yourself this question. If you could only do one thing all day long, what is the one thing that you do that generates or contributes the most valuable results to yourself and to your business? If you could only do one thing all day long, what one thing would it be? And then when you start to play with this question, you say, if I could be absolutely excellent at one thing, in my business? What one thing would have the greatest impact on my financial results? If I could be absolutely superior in one activity or task or function, which one task would it be? And then you set that as a goal or as a target, and you write it down, and you make a plan, and you work on becoming absolutely excellent at that one thing. Now, here's a great concept in Turbo Strategy, and it is developing what we call the economic denominator of your business. Determining your economic denominator. Now, in my coaching program, Focal Point, we talk about the economic denominator as the focal point. For example, one of the things we say is that your focal point as a person is your hourly income. Is that all successful and really highly paid people think about their hourly income most of the time. They think, is what I'm doing right now yielding me the highest hourly rate possible? In a business, you have to pick an economic denominator as well. And this becomes the single number that becomes the organizing number of all of your other sales and marketing and business activities. If you pick the wrong number, you can find yourself working at low levels of results and getting all kinds of frustration. I'll give you an example that Jim Collins uses. He said, talks about an operatic association, nonprofit, whose goal was to get more and more members to join the operatic association to contribute a donation that helped the opera association function. He sat down with them, nonprofit, and he helped them change their idea of the economic denominator, not to getting more members, but to getting fewer members, but who contributed more each year because of their tremendous appreciation for opera. As a result, the company turned around. The organization transformed, and instead of focusing their efforts on broad marketing to get more members, they started to focus personal efforts on one-on-one with major donors. Jim Collins goes around to companies to help them determine their economic denominator. And you know what he charges? $50,000 a pop to do what I just told you 1 minute ago. He charges $50,000 to help them redefine their economic denominator, which is by taking a rifleman and pushing the barrel and saying, no, focus on that target rather than this target. He helps people determine where to put the crosshairs in their lives. So, what are the economic denominators for you? Well, number one could be the number of individual sales. For instance, if you're running Domino's Pizza, your goal is to increase the number of people who phone and buy pizzas. You can't force them to eat more pizzas. You can't say, why don't you buy two or three pizzas? People can only eat a certain amount. So maybe your goal is to increase the number of sales. If you can increase the number of sales, profitability, growth, everything else takes care of itself. A second economic denominator you can focus on is the size of each sale. Maybe you can focus on selling more to each customer. Maybe your customers who are willing to spend a dollar would be willing to spend $5 if you gave them a really good reason to do it. Many companies totally transform themselves by selling more to each customer. Now, a third economic denominator could be the frequency of purchase by your customers. For example, I work with a restaurant chain that found that their average customer was coming in once every 2 months. So they set a goal not to advertise to get more average customers, but to take such good care of their customers that they came back more often. Eventually, they got their customers coming back once every month and doubled the size of their business. Then they got their customers coming back once every 3 weeks and increased the size of their business by 50% more. The whole restaurant chain went private just last year for $596 million. They bought out the owners for almost $600 million because the owners had figured out the right economic denominator. Now, a fourth economic denominator could be the amount of profit that you earn per sale or transaction. Sometimes you'll find that your biggest volume customers contribute very little profit. You may find out that there are small customers who are loyal, who are steady purchasers, who are very profitable. And many companies are dropping many of their customers and focusing just on those customers where every sale contributes maximum profitability. Finally, an economic denominator that can affect everything else could be the speed of delivery. It could be the speed of fulfillment. It could be the quality level of your product or service. Because you'll find that if you're customers all say that your speed and quality is vastly superior to your competitors, they'll buy more from you, they will buy more often, you'll earn more profits because you'll get more customers at lower cost of advertising and sales, and so on. So throughout your business, pick your shots. Keep asking, what are the economic denominators? What is the number that I should focus on that would have the greatest impact on my overall results? And the ability to pick that and focus on it single-mindedly is the mark of the superior thinker. Well, here's another area of turbo strategy, and we call it applying the seven R's to your business continually. Remember, in times of rapid change, you have to keep stopping and looking at these seven R's and seeing how they apply to your business. The first of the seven R's is rethinking. Now, remember, thinking is the highest paid work in America, so whenever you have a chance, stand back and rethink about your business. Imagine yourself as your own management consultant, brought in to evaluate every part of your business, and stand back and rethink and say, is this something we should be doing? Is this the best use of our time? If we weren't doing this, would we get into it? One of the most important things you do as a professional is take vacations, take time off, sit quietly by yourself, go for a walk on the beach or in the woods. Think about your business like you would allow tea leaves to steep in a teapot, and develop rich, deep thoughts about your business and just rethink it over and over again. Sometimes one new insight that you have by taking time to stand back will change the whole direction of your life. The second R is reevaluate. Whenever you experience stress or frustration or resistance or failure in any of your activities, stop the clock and reevaluate. Say, are we doing the right thing? Are we operating on the right assumptions? Are we going in the right direction? Do we have the right people in place? Should we be doing this at all? Knowing what we now know, would we get into it? So continually rethink and reevaluate your business. The third R is reorganize. Now, it used to be that companies would reorganize every few years. Today, you need to be reorganizing every few weeks, sometimes every few days. When external pressures from your markets, customers, pressures for sales, revenues, money, and so on seem to become overwhelming, continually move people and resources around within your business to increase your return on equity, the return on energy, to increase your productivity and your performance and your output. Ask yourself, how should you reorganize? How could you reorganize your business to get better results? How could you reorganize your work life? How could you reorganize your time? How could you maybe start a little bit earlier, or work a little harder, or stay a little later, or refocus your efforts in order to get better results? The fourth R is to re-engineer. Now, in re-engineering, the whole focus is on simplifying your work. And the way that you simplify your work is you look at how you could consolidate steps, how you could eliminate steps in the process, how you could outsource activities or delegate, how you could move things around to constantly make it simpler, because the key to simplifying your life, to re-engineering, is to reduce the number of steps in any work process. Maybe you can give several jobs to a single person. Maybe you can stop doing certain things altogether. Maybe you can outsource services that your customers don't care about and have outside companies do them. How could you re-engineer and simplify your business and your life? Here's a rule, by the way, is you can only get control of your life to the degree to which you stop doing certain things. Let me repeat. You can only get control of your business and your life to the degree to which you stop doing things. Not to the degree to which you do more things efficiently, but to the degree to which you stop doing certain things altogether so you can focus more time and energy on those few things that are in the top 20% that give you the greatest results. Now, the fifth R is to restructure. And restructuring means that you move time, people, money, energy, activities, and resources into those areas that generate the most profit. In warfare, we say, when you're under attack, you give everybody rifles and send them up to the front line. In business, when you're under financial attack, you focus more and more of your energies on doing those things that generate the fastest and most predictable sales and revenue and results. One of the things I say is that never allow any other activity to take priority over revenue-generating activity. The most important part of business strategy is cash flow. is getting it, increasing it, assuring it, protecting it, safeguarding it. Keep focused on cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. And no other activity, no meetings, no administration, no anything else is more important than an activity that generates cash flow. And the only things that generate cash flow are sales, marketing, sales and revenue, advertising, promotion, getting the phone to ring. So keep restructuring your company so that more and more of your best people and efforts are focused on generating the revenues, which are the lifeblood of the enterprise. Many companies transform their business by just stopping doing everything else and just focusing on revenue-generating activities. Just focus on making sales. The sixth R is to reinvent your business. The way you reinvent your business is you imagine walking across the street and starting your business over again. Imagine that you go through a rapid transition, your business burns to the ground, the economy changes tremendously, and you walk across the street to a new office and start your business over. Here's the question. What products and services would you start up immediately and get available to your customers? And what products and services might you not start up again? What customers and markets would you get in touch with? Would you take care of? Would you safeguard the most if you were starting your business again? And what customers and markets might you not pay attention to anymore? What people in your business and suppliers would you want to have, first of all, what would be the most important people and suppliers that you'd want to have or get in touch with, and what people and suppliers might you not use again? Always think about reinventing your business. And finally, the seventh R is to regain control. By practicing the first six R's, you regain control. You take action. You take charge. You act boldly on your business, put it under your control, and turn it around. Well, there's four great basics for business or strategic success. We've talked about them before, and we'll talk about them again. The first is specialization. Always ask yourself, in what area, what product or service or customer, what market do I specialize versus generalize? Don't try to be everything to all people. Try to specialize in an area or a market niche that you can dominate. And this brings us to number two, is to differentiate. How can you differentiate and be the best in your selected market area with your selected product or service or customer? What is your unique selling proposition? What could it be? What is it that you do better than anybody else? What could you do better? What should you do better? How do you differentiate yourself from your competition so that everybody thinks of you as superior in a particular way? The third key basic for a turbo strategy success is segmentation. Who are the very best prospective customers for the things that you do better than anyone else? Who are the customers that most appreciate what you do and will most pay for it and will most buy it and recommend you to their friends? Focus your energies on those customers because you'll get better results faster in terms of cash flow by satisfying those special customers than you could with anybody else. And finally, the fourth key is concentration. Concentration is to focus your time, money, and energy on your most and best potential customers, the ones who can and will buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. Focus all of your energies on selling more and more of your best, most profitable products and services to those people who can and will buy and pay and who represent the future of your business. Now, as we come to the end of this seminar on turbo strategy, remember the military principles of strategy, which are, first of all, the objective, know exactly what you want. The principle of the offensive, go under the attack and sell everything you can. The principle of the mass, focus your time, energy, and resources on your best markets and customers and opportunities. The principle of maneuver, be fast and flexible and creative in dealing with your market. The principle of intelligence, get the facts, do your homework, prepare thoroughly. And finally, the principle of concerted action. Work well with your team. Put your whole heart into working with the very best people to get the very best results. In every part of turbo strategy, remember this, the key to success is to focus on results. Focus on sales, focus on revenues, focus on cash flow. Focus on quality in every area, in everything you do. Focus on both long-term goals and short-term goals. Focus on the most valuable use of your time every minute. Focus on your top priorities, your top customers, your top people, your top products. And above everything else, have the courage to begin and to act in faith, and have the courage to persist and to endure and to never give up. Remember, your business success is absolutely guaranteed if you know exactly who you are and exactly what you want, and if you commit yourself to doing what you do in an excellent fashion and get better and better and never give up and engage and commit yourself to continuous and never-ending improvement. Your success as a business person, your success as an individual, is absolutely guaranteed as long as you never, never give up.